This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Yesterday, rain postponed the game between the Boston Red Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays, but on Yawkey Way, the wet weather didn't keep Boston's Hot Tamale Brass Band from coming out and playing.
In fact, we didn't come out to Fenway Park to hear this band. We had hoped to see the game that wasn't played, but also to sit down with Red Sox manager John Farrell, which we did. We thought it was a good time to check in with a new Sox skipper who's had quite a year so far.
He's taken the team from worst and last season's horrendous debacle to first. The Sox are atop the AL East, just a half game ahead of Tampa Bay, still holding on to the best record in the American League.
So, with the rain coming down and the Hot Tamale Brass Band playing, we sat down with Farrell in his office and asked him first to explain the team's dramatic turnaround.
After the end of the season last year, it was a clear vision of Ben Cherington's to reshape this roster. We knew going into the start of the season there'd be no less than 9 new names. So when someone thinks back to the issues or the disappointments or whatever word you want to associate with 2012, there was a natural turnover that made some wholesale changes. And I think when you look at the combination of all those factors, it allowed us to go into spring training with a clear-cut vision on how we wanted to prepare and to begin the 2013 season.
There's a lot of talk about a different team culture this year. I know you've talked about it. I'd just like to ask you, what does that mean, and how did you go about building a kind of team culture that you wanted, or even rebuilding the kind of team culture that the Red Sox were known for not long ago and seem to be known for again this year?
The people inside the player, the characteristics of the individual is what we identified. We knew and needed talented players, but alongside that were players that had reputations of being good teammates, that would sacrifice for one another, that were maybe willing to buy into a common cause rather than the individual accomplishments. And when those players have that track record, the you know, whether it's Johnny Gomes, whether it's Mike Napoli, David Ross, Ryan Dempster, that's just to name a few. Those guys come from winning environments. They've been key contributors in their previous organizations that have won. Well, how do you define chemistry? That goes back to the personal traits of the individual. And when you bring a group together, the sum of the parts is the reason why we're having the success that we've experienced.
I've always thought that when you win, that creates good chemistry. But you seem to be talking about good chemistry as helping the team win. You see what I'm saying? I mean, does good chemistry actually help a team win?
It's the chicken or the egg, which comes first. I get it. I understand it. We felt like betting on people and not just a stat line on a given player was the way to go about making the selection. People selection is probably the hardest thing and the most important thing to get right. So, yes, we needed to get off to a good start. We needed to win, and that will certainly perpetuate the overall chemistry. But I think what chemistry has allowed us to do, and talking about the tight-knit group that we have here, that gives us the ability to draw from within. That energy that we can draw upon late in a game might be one of the reasons why we've been able to have 9 walk-off wins here in Fenway, or do some things inside of a game. We've had 20-plus comeback wins. So that speaks to the overall character of this group and the character of our team.
I want to ask you about a couple of key players, and let me start with Dustin Pedroia, your star second baseman, of course. He's now been signed to a long-term contract that's going to keep him the face of this team for the next 8 years. How important is that, to have that settled?
I think any time that there's stability and continuity, you have a greater chance for success. And talking about Dustin specifically, he embodies everything that we value in a player, and that is the game is the most important thing. How you commit and how you work towards preparing daily is the thing that we can control every day we walk into the clubhouse, and he's a leader by example. He sets the tone for all our early work during the regular season or sets the tone for our work day in spring training. And what I mean by that is the intensity and the speed in which he practices is infectious to the rest of the guys in uniform. And, you know, I like to refer to him as the straw that stirs the drink somewhat. And you can't measure the heart within an individual. You can measure the tools, but the heart and will to win and to overcome is second to none in Dustin's case.
You know, there's something else about the Pedroia story, of course. He could become, I mean, it looks like he will become, you know, one of those few players these days who actually plays with one club. That's almost a sort of quaint idea in this modern day of baseball. But I'm just wondering what you think about that or what you have to say about that.
I think a lot more players would want to do that. And so when you think about the rarity of it, one, you've got to be an exceptional player. Because there's always either a young player coming up or there's a player on the free agent market that might be better than you. So, one, you've got to be extremely talented. And then, two, I think you have to, as a player, and Dustin embodies this, he understands his place within the history of the Red Sox, within the history of the game. I think he understands the rarity and how special it is to be in one place for an entire major league career and one as a successful career as Dustin's going to be. I think it's great for the game. He probably had to withstand a lot of pressures for those who might represent him through a players association that would want the highest dollar. But Dustin values things that are not monetary within the game, and it speaks volumes.
I wanted to just ask you about that. I mean, John, you've been in this game for a long, long time, not taking anything away from Dustin Pedroia's extraordinary talent. Still, you know, is there any part of you that's surprised? $100 million for a second baseman? I mean, this is sort of the economy of the game. This is representative of how the economy of this game has developed over the years, I guess.
Well, it has. And the game has flourished despite current situations that are going on, the black eyes that have been present throughout the history of our sport. It continues to be resilient. The game itself is resilient, and it continues to grow. You want to cheer on the players that can earn an incredible lifestyle. They can have incredible earning power because of the uniqueness of their skill set. So you don't feel any animosity towards them. You just understand that the game continues to grow and is very healthy in terms of the revenues that it generates. And to see players share in that is great to see.
The other player that I want to ask you briefly about is David Ortiz, a great designated hitter. Of course, he passed a great milestone recently. He's got the most hits in the history of designated hitters. How big an accomplishment is that, and are we likely to see more David Ortiz milestones? I know he's still got some years ahead of him, but what do you think?
Well, first and foremost, I think when it's all said and done for David's career, I think he will be the one that all others are compared to. He is a student of the game. He has gotten better with age, and the numbers bear that out. His ability to hit left-handers has improved year over year over the last 4 years, and he keeps himself in great shape. What lies ahead, only he will be able to control that. He's playing with an enthusiasm right now and a love for the game that kind of speaks to, you know, we've talked a lot about the chemistry and the good natured of this group. He has thrived with that. You see the way he runs the bases. He's stolen some bases. He's got some steals.
What's he got, six bases or something?
I think he does. It's you know, for a guy that's never been known to you know, run the bases more than station to station or 90 feet at a time, that's what shows in that enthusiasm, his aggressiveness. He's a beacon every time he walks into the room. He lights a room up.
You know, when they put that shift on him, do you ever say as manager, hey, drop a bunt down the third baseline? Keep him honest.
Oh, he's attempted a couple.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen that happen.
And I think, you know, as the shift is employed more and more around the game, you're seeing, you know, power left-handed hitters try to beat that shift just to get on base in a certain game situation. But at the same time, we know the way his swing works, and with that left field wall here, the Green Monster being so close, he'd probably take his chances to drive a ball off that wall rather than try to put a bunt down.
So let me ask you, the last time the Red Sox won a World Series, you were here, so you might have a feel about a particular team that feels like they could do it. What do they have to do to get back to that championship this year?
One would have a healthy Clay Buchholz on the mound for us. I think health and getting back to full strength is first and foremost. That's the one thing that hopefully we can control. As long as we can get back to full strength health-wise and we don't shy away from the work needed, those are the things that we can control. What the outcomes become, time will tell. But I think as long as we continue to pay attention and stay committed to that process, I think we've got a very good opportunity to advance into the postseason.
Well, John Farrell, I have one last question. I'd love to know one surprising fact about being a manager that the average listener out there, the average baseball fan around Boston might not know about.
Well, what they probably don't see is the balance of dealing with the media, not just because we're having this interview and this conversation, the time that is spent, and it's because of the Red Sox place, and we're certainly a major part of the fabric of this city and this region. There's a lot of attention. So there's a 20-30 minute press conference mid-afternoon. There's a post-game press conference that follows the game that night. But there's a number of individual meetings with players that lead up to that, because the last thing that I want is for a player to hear something for the first time through the media. So the amount of time that goes into dealing with the media and the one-on-one conversations with the players, that's a major portion of the day as far as my workday is concerned.
Well, John Farrell, thank you so much for answering some of our questions today. We're really very, very grateful, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Appreciate it very much. We're looking forward to the challenges ahead.
And that's John Farrell, manager of the Boston Red Sox. They play tonight in Baltimore against the Orioles.
And that's it for our program this week. We'll end today with music from the Hot Tamale Brass Band, recorded yesterday on a rainy, yucky way. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow. No, join us again Monday. Have a great weekend. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.